my hope is pretty high, and I can tell you, dealing with some of the stuff that I dealt with, I was ashamed of myself. And when working with therapy and everything, and something I no longer struggled with, I was proud of myself, and it made my hope even higher to realize, you know what, I can get better. And that really bolsters your hope. Whenever you are able to overcome something, it bolsters your hope.
Welcome to There Is Hope. The advice or counsel given is provided for informational purposes only. Your host for There Is Hope, Richard Dover.
Well, welcome to There Is Hope. This is your radio host, Richard Dover, and I have my son, Joshua Dover, with me again. And in our last interview, we were talking about PTSD, what it is, and then some of Joshua's experiences. And then Joshua shared something that got me thinking of I hear individuals share, and it's not because of PTSD. It's something else. And I want to talk about how they're similar and how they're different. And I think that when I share some of what I'm going to share, I think Josh is going to say that what he has seen happen with individuals that's had PTSD. So Josh, for those who maybe didn't hear the last interview, you had talked about the fact that the PTSD is very strong, and that you can logically, mentally, that you can know certain things, but then when the emotions that come in into you from different experiences, that it can trigger the PTSD. So let's take an example. You shared that you know that if you're driving down the road and there's a piece of paper on the ground, that's a piece of paper, but then you would avoid it because that could be an IUD because of you being in Iraq. Is that right?
Yeah. So it as stupid as it may sound, a piece of paper, anybody in their right mind knows what can you do with a piece of paper. But my mind would play out like, maybe that's a pressure plate or something like that. And so
NIV, you would know that's not true, but you don't want to take any chances.
Yeah, there's
right?
No way I'm going to risk my life over, my mind telling me you're being stupid. and it is, when
I sit back and think about it,
I can tell you it sounds stupid. But in the moment, as you're driving, the emotion's too raw for you to deny the motion.
So is it that if you're driving, you see it, can you say, "There, oh my goodness, that could be an IUD. Oh no, that's stupid thinking." And actually, that's stupid thinking. But then get to the whole PTSD, which is because it's like you're in Iraq. Is that?
Yeah, there's two different things. There's just the PTSD in general. In a general sense, you can have those thoughts, but then what you're describing, the second part, is essentially flashbacks. And those happen to people that have PTSD, can happen, I should say. They don't always, but they can happen. So, for instance, the firecracker that somebody lit off, I literally had a flashback and thought I was in Iraq until I hit the ground. The force of the ground hitting me is what jarred me back and made me realize I was in a Safeway parking lot.
So you
I was
didn't even
not
have
in
a,
Iraq.
You didn't even have a chance to think what this is.
Not. It literally was instantaneous. I literally, if you ever watch the movie, the Sands of Time or whatever, it's like somebody put a pause button on and threw me into another dimension, which was Iraq. And so when I dove on the ground, I was diving into the sandy dirt or whatever of Iraq, onto my post floor or whatever. I was not diving onto concrete. And I can tell you, I definitely dove on concrete. And that's what kind of jarred me, was the pain of landing on the ground is what jarred me and brought me back to so-called reality.
And think about people who are in a lot worse shape than you, that have experienced a lot worse than what you did, and that happening all the time. I mean, I don't want to think about it.
Well, and to give you a good example where, I mean, this one is kind of if somebody saw this in a parking lot, they'd just be like, "What the hell's wrong? And that guy's a loon." Well, to give you an example of something that's really even worse off that involves other people, even to this day, I still have a little bit of issues, but not as bad. But when I was first back and went on a camping trip with family, I was in the tent with my mother and my sister. We had a huge tent. And my mom went to put a blanket on me because she thought, you know, I looked cold or something. She was just trying to be a mom. And she started to reach down to put the blanket on me. And I turned around because I woke up. And I literally thought I was in Iraq. And I thought that was an enemy. And I reached out to grab her by the throat to try to strangle her. And it scared her to death. She screamed. And her screaming is what kind of snapped me back to reality. And that was my personal experience. Unfortunately, you can ask others that have had the same similar experience, but they'll come to and realize they'd been choking their wife out.
Right.
And that's been in bed with them. So it can be a very violent thing. It's not necessarily just look at that, your weirdo jumped on the ground. It can literally be something that is very dangerous. So the severity of it can be different for each person.
But you never had the enemy come at you. Is that accurate or not?
No, I never had an enemy, like when I was sitting there sleeping, come right up to me like that. It was the...
It didn't matter, though, because...
Yeah, it did. If you remember
you don't risk
the...
It.
Yep, and if you remember a couple interviews ago, I described a time of what I thought was an enemy sneaking up on my post, and I thought they were right behind me, and I slashed my knife at them. I flipped around backwards and tried to slice. That is what triggered that, was feeling that I was being snuck up on
there.
While I'm at night. I was being something was sneaking up on me. And so that's where that pulled me into that so-called fake reality.
Right. Okay, now
but I never directly had an enemy there.
So this go back to, we had ended in the last interview where you were talking about how bad it was for you. Is if you'd go, and of course you were in the Iraq and you were clearing out buildings at times and all that. But again, it wouldn't matter if you ever did that or not. It was that the fact that there could be an enemy, somebody out to get you in your apartment. So you'd go in, check anywhere and everywhere, thinking there's somebody that could hide any place, refrigerator, cabinets, any place anybody could hide. And how real that was to you. I mean, literally, it was to protect yourself. And even though logically you say, what's the odds of somebody being in the apartment? But it didn't matter what the logic says. It's the potential, okay, in your mind. So I've worked with people with all kinds of addictions, all kinds of issues. But there's one drug that makes people, one of the worst drugs that makes people paranoid, and that's meth. And meth will take people into a realm that is unimaginable. And what you described is I can't tell you how many meth addicts, when they're high on meth or when they're coming off of the meth because of what it does to them, a lot of them actually come off the meth or getting off the meth, but they absolutely will believe there are people in the room, the cops are going to give them whatever. And one guy told me that he thinks the cops have found him, right? So he's looking out the window. He keeps looking out the window, looking at, by the way, people say that's how you can tell someone's a meth addict because they keep looking out the curtain window. All the time, you probably got a neighbor that's a meth addict because they're so paranoid. But he looked, and he thought for sure the cops are coming, and he, in his mind, buried himself into the wood floor, that he put his body into the wood floor to hide from them. And it was as real as can be. And I hear a lot of stories. And so the reality is that person's on drugs, and are having the same experiences that you're not on drugs. Now think about that for a moment. If somebody's on drugs, you can explain away. It's the drugs that did it to them, right?
Yeah.
And so if they just get off the drugs, they'll be okay. Well, for you, you're not on the drugs. You can't just get off the drugs and be okay.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost the opposite.
Right.
You know, they give
okay,
you drugs
right?
to get you to be okay.
Right. They're just the opposite. So when you would do that, I mean, did it check in the room and everything, then did it click to you? Oh, wait a second, this was stupid, or did it even click to you?
So
you just knew you were secure, so it's okay, and you go to bed.
So after the fact of it, it was, I mean, through the entire process, and I can logically, my brain is telling me, you don't need to do this. And I vividly remember thinking to myself, you don't have to do this. But because, I mean, my heart's racing as I'm doing this, because the physiological aspect of it is, I mean, it's not just mental. Physiologically, my heart is pounding. I'm holding my breath, or my breath is very shallow and very quick, getting enough oxygen going. But there's physiological effects going on, and you can't deny something like that. You can't deny your heart racing or sweat dripping down your forehead. That's an actual physical thing happening. And if that is so strong, how can you not deny it? How can you deny it? And so to me, it was like, yes, I know this is stupid logically. I mean, the chances of someone actually being in my home are like, what, 1 in 500,000 or something? I mean, it's something unreal. I mean, yes, some people do have home invasion, stuff like that, but what is the chances it's going to be you? I mean, it's very, very slim. And every time that you come home, I mean, seriously.
Right.
So logically, through it, I knew it was not, there was not going to be anybody. I knew it. But emotionally, I felt like, no, there could be anybody anywhere. And so I would do it. And then afterwards, I would feel safe. And then there would be almost like a session of mental abuse where I would tell myself, why the heck did you do that? You're stupid. You didn't need to do that. See, I proved it. You're stupid. There's nobody here. And so I would beat myself up.
Yeah, I was going to say, so the problem is with this PTSD that you're talking about, and again, somebody that would be, the person has that have to be in control and normally can do a pretty good job at it, except for some areas. We do absolutely terrible job at it.
Junkie.
That's the problem. But out of it is the terrible experience of not being able to just say, stop it.
That's so horrible.
Right? I don't know, the hopelessness and stuff. So I think what you're saying, I was thinking one time I would go on my property and late at night, and I had to check on making sure, I was checking if the garden gate was closed or no deer gotten into our garden. And I'm walking back, and it's pitch black. I live in an acre or 2 acres, and it's pitch black. We don't have any bear in our area. We don't have any big animals. The only thing anything dangerous, we have deer, okay, and armadillos and stuff that isn't going to hurt me. But I'm walking back, and I had my pistol with me, and I'm walking back, and I start to feel like something's following me. And there's got to be something following me. Well, no deer is going to be following me, okay? And I wasn't thinking deer. I was thinking a big animal. And it didn't matter. I didn't know if it was a mountain lion or a bear or whatever it was, but something's following me. And I would stop and I would listen to hear if I hear anything stop, crunching.
Yep.
And there was nothing crunching, nothing. It was my head. It was literally my head. There was no evidence of anything. And I'm walking back and I'm stopping and listening. And finally I said, forget it. And I says, I'm going to run. And I said, well, no, if you run, that animal thinks
something's going to get you.
Yeah. And so, and my heart's racing and everything else. And I'm telling myself, this is ridiculous. I'm letting my head play with me. I'm letting the dark play with me, all that stuff. I just described what you were going through. How often?
I mean, it was any time I left the house and came home sometime after the sun had gone down. And so it was, at least once a week, if not multiple times a week.
Okay, and then when I see
and the
you,
trash was every day that I drove, so every
right,
day.
Right. And then when I seen you one time, you made it clear you didn't want to be in a small room.
Yeah, that used to be. Thankfully, that's something I've gotten over. I no longer have to drive around trash. I used to have to face the door in any at restaurant or room or anything I was in. I'd have to face the door. Any entrances or anything like that. That's stuff that thankfully, through a lot of counseling and therapy, I have no issues with whatsoever. It's like I, when I do it now, it seems like, gosh, that seems so weird that used to be a problem.
Now, what
and yet
about,
I know why, but it just seems weird.
What about you had to have noise in a room?
So As far as sounds go, that's still a problem in crowds. So I have a problem like Costco is something I struggle with even during the day because I was constantly having to be alert. And when you're trying
somebody, a bad
to,
guy can hide with among all those people.
And that's the thing is you're, at least for me, I have a problem with large crowds because there's so much chatter and I'm trying to decipher everything. So think of if you're in a room with 30 people or 20 people and everyone's talking, my brain is trying to process every conversation and every word that I'm hearing all at the same time, which is obviously system overload, and it's not possible.
And
so
why is your
I
brain
become very agitated. To be able to find or hear something that would indicate to me,
where the threat is.
Joke around, but say a word bomb or say a word, you know, marine or anything that could be a word that could be something potentially dangerous that I need to be aware of. And then boom, narrow in, that's the person that I've got to be cautious of and be ready at any point to, you know, take their life essentially.
Right,
and
right.
As stupid as that is in a shopping mart or whatever, that's the reality. And I've gotten a lot better at it. However, it is still something that bothers me, but I no longer have the feeling that I've got to be ready at any moment's notice to, you know, if it takes bare hands, it takes a can of soup to kill somebody
right.
is going to try to kill me. Because in my head, it was, in a group of people, it triggered something to where I thought I wasn't safe. I don't know any of these people. I don't know what their intentions are, but there could potentially be someone in this group that wants to hurt me. And when I say hurt, I don't mean
culture.
Like wants to smack me or something. Anytime that it's a hurt thing, it's they want to kill me. And so it's a big thing. You know, if you think somebody's going to try to kill you, you're going to be on edge. It's just the way it is.
Right. So now let's get into solution. I don't know if there's permanent solutions, but what helped you? So let's get into the positive side for those who are listening or saying, you know what, that isn't my story. My story is that as a woman that was raped, and so whenever I see any man that looks anything like my rapist, I don't know if that's him got out of jail and going to get me, even though he has life in prison or whatever. So, I mean, there's people, again, all kinds of different stories. And they're going through some of the things you're talking about, and they're saying, well, maybe I do have PTSD because that this is some of the same stuff I'm going through. What's the answer? What's the hope? What has given you the ability to be able to function better?
You know, the biggest thing is reaching out, first of all, to ask for help. That's the biggest key. And I think you said it before, but even if that's just a friend telling, hey, you know, I need to talk to you about this or something. Obviously, the best thing you can do is to eventually get professional help. But don't allow yourself to deal with this stuff and not tell anybody and get yourself in such a dark place that you feel like you can't do anything to where killing yourself and death itself is the only option. Because I can tell you it's not the only option. And I've lost my own best friend from the military that shot himself because he couldn't deal with the so-called things going in your head.
You think that's what happened?
I absolutely know for a fact. I know him and I had some conversations, and we both dealt with a lot of the same issues. And so, you know, we were already best friends, and so that was something that kind of connected us even more. And I know that's why he was an alcoholic, so to speak. Dealing with a lot of drinking was because of the thoughts and memories that plagued him, and he was in a lot worse stuff than I was in. And unfortunately, he shot himself after getting so drunk. The hospital staff said that they don't even know how he could have pulled a trigger, that he was more drunk than you shouldn't even be able to physically move in the conditions that he was in. And he still was able to pick up a gun and really didn't have the thoughts about him to know what he was even doing, and he killed himself. And unfortunately, I believe it's 22 veterans a day kill themselves in suicide. And and that's only veterans. That's not counting everyone else. Like you said, people that have been raped and everything else, the numbers are astronomical. You don't need to kill yourself to make the thing stop. You need to ask for help. And then for me, the thing that has helped a lot is being able to have somebody that I can talk to about these things that can start helping me go through the therapy. And there's different ways of therapy. I personally do not like medicine, but I found out, I gave it a shot, and I found out that their medicine isn't all bad. And there's some meds that I've had taken off because of the fact that it didn't make me feel human. It made me feel like a robot and stuff like that. Those were things where I was like, I never want to take meds because of that. Well, I'm not on those kind of meds. They take them off for me if I do that and they find something different. But medicine does help. And you're dealing with chemical problems going on in the brain as well sometimes. And so don't think that you're, you know, a messed up person because you have to take a pill. Sometimes your body doesn't make a natural, a chemical. And so that's something you got to realize that you're, you know, it's no different than somebody eating vitamins to help healthy eyes or something. I mean, not vitamins, carrots or something. You know, you're taking something that is helping your body that your body can't do. And so just get help. It could be in the form of medicine through your provider. It could be counseling. There's group counseling. There's all kinds of different things that they've found that are scientifically sound that they've proven help people with PTSD.
When I say talk to a friend or something like that, I think there's wisdom because a friend could blow you off and say, you don't really have a problem.
Pick the right friend.
pick the right friend. Yeah, you don't really have a problem. You know, no big deal and all that. In the midst of it, where would you say you're at in your hope? And, I mean, do you have hope that someday that this will all go away or hope that you'll be able to manage it or that it is less? Kind of where's your hope at?
Well, I can tell you, my hope is pretty high, and I can tell you, dealing with some of the stuff that I dealt with, just to give you an idea, the trash thing, I was ashamed of myself for having to do that because of the fact that I knew that it wasn't logical, and I felt a lot of shame. And when working with therapy and everything, and that finally was something that I no longer struggled with, I was proud of myself. And it made my hope even higher to realize, you know what, I can get better. And that really bolsters your hope. Whenever you are able to overcome something, it bolsters your hope. And so I've been able to overcome a lot of the problems I had pertaining to PTSD. And so even though I still struggle with things, I know that one, either it's just for a time, or two, there is methods and things that I've learned that can help me, even though I still deal with them, to continue to live a pretty decent life. And I can go shopping. Yes, some stuff bothers me when I'm shopping, but it doesn't keep me from going shopping. And there is some activities and stuff that I do that, you know, takes the angst and the worry and the pain and all that away. And so my hope is really high. And I think the way you get that is don't give up on yourself, because that's the biggest thing is the instant you give up on yourself, your hope starts to go down.
Okay, take Titus in some to the motorcycle accident. By the way, I guess I should say this. Josh and I don't know how long we didn't talk. I don't know, 2 years, 3 years, I'm not sure. We have never covered that since we've started talking again. But I will tell you, Josh, hearing this is the first time you're hearing how bad it was, okay? And so for somebody that's listening that you have a loved one, just know that they may be going through some stuff that you have no idea what they're going through. There's a part of me that makes me angry hearing the stories. It makes me sad. It's all kinds of different feelings. It makes me angry at the military because of not getting the help that you could have gotten a lot easier earlier, all kinds of different things. And then it makes me angry at you that you're so stubborn that you don't get the help earlier when you should have. I mean, there's all these emotions that I go through, you know, just hearing this, a lot of this for the first time. But I want to say for me that I'm going to tell you, I get off this phone, I'm telling Carmi, my wife, and she's going to be praying for you and praying that you get free. And and so watch out. You're liable to get totally free from this, and you won't have any more excuses for your messed up life. Because but I believe that, I mean, through prayer, that the guy can do some things and bring stability in mind. He can, the chemicals that aren't being produced, all that kind of stuff. And so I do believe in the power of prayer. I believe that God can do things. And that's honestly, for me, the hope for my son as I hear this. My hope for my son is that he gets at a place that he has, quote, a pretty normal life. And yet the reality is you may have to deal just with the rest of your life. And you've accepted that.
I have. I can tell you right now, if you would have told me that I had to deal with everything that I was dealing with for the rest of my life, if somebody told me that, I don't think I would be here. But I can tell you that I didn't have to deal with all of that for the rest of my life, that there's a lot of this stuff that I actually don't deal with anymore because of getting help. And there's a lot of the stuff that is not as bad as it was. Any deep, dark moments that I had in the past, I don't have anything even close to that pertaining to the same issues. And so there is definitely hope. And the first step is just reaching out, getting help.
The whole purpose of even doing podcasts and stuff is because of some things with your motorcycle crash and all that. And so as we finish this interview, I just want to tie in something with your motorcycle crash. So hearing everything that you described, and then you get into a major motorcycle crash that family members didn't know if you were going to make it or not. It was serious enough that we didn't know if you were going to be alive and survive the crash or not.
Oh,
and
the obviously, doctors didn't either.
August 1st, I think, is when.
Yep,
August 1st of 2020. And we are now October the 24th, I believe, 2020.
Yep, 24th today.
Around. And so it's been a couple months. Obviously, you are alive and doing well overall in the midst of what is still not fun for you. But on a motorcycle crash, that could be an example of PTSD again, right?
And I can actually tell you, as confirmed by counseling, I specifically reached out when I was in the hospital and said, I need somebody to talk to. And because it was a very traumatic accident. Just to give a kind of a little preview here, I was on my motorcycle and I was hit by an SUV in head-on collision. Just going 35 miles an hour, so not very fast, but it was enough to nearly take my life. And I reached out, even in the hospital, and said, I need to talk to somebody. And I've been going through counseling just for the last week now, and I was told that I actually do have some PTSD associated with this motorcycle accident, and so I'm currently working with them to work through that. You know, it doesn't have to be that you were in war to get PTSD, I'm currently working on issues with that, with the motorcycle accident.
And that's mainly because you learned that getting help works. So why
it
why
is.
Wait?
It is.
Why wait 6 months from now?
Why wait a year? Why wait years?
Right.
I mean,
right.
There's people that'll wait 10 years dealing with something.
And the next thing you know, you find yourself, you're drinking and drugging because of a motorcycle crash. And you didn't even know that's why you started drinking and drugging, right?
Yep.
You got issues at something or another. You're feeling, every time you feel pain, it reminds you of, am I going to have another surgery, this, that, and all the other stuff. And so you turn around and you find some coping mechanism of some sort that isn't healthy. And you're doing that for 10, 15, 20 years later, and it goes deeper and darker and all that stuff, and if you could have just gotten the help at the very beginning as soon as the thoughts came. And so hopefully somebody listening to us is going through something or another, and hopefully it's something that maybe was something pretty recent that went on, and it's a pretty tragic event that took place in your life, and you're maybe already going to some substance or this, that, or anything else to find a relief when really you should be getting some counseling and working through that. And so hopefully that you do that. And Josh, as we end, let our audience know that in our next conversation, we're going to be talking about out of the PTSD, out of all this different stuff. Josh made some bad choices. I don't know how far we'll get into some of those bad choices that he made along the way of trying to cope with all this. But then there was starting to be a turnaround that was going on, and then all of a sudden a major motorcycle crash happens. And so we got two or three more interviews before we actually get to the motorcycle crash, the hospital stuff, and all the stuff that went on there. Josh, what was the last thing you would like to say to our audience before we go? Something that you would like to share?
Yeah, it's almost like you're reading my mind, because I wanted to interrupt, but I don't want to interrupt and be rude. But I wanted to say that, you know, anyone that's listening, just realize that there is hope. Just reach out. That's the key, is to reach out when you're struggling and you don't know what to do. I can tell you right now what to do, and that's ask for help, because it's changed my life. And a lot of the stuff that I thought the only way I could get out of it was by eating a bullet, I can tell you right now, I no longer am like that, and I'm no longer dealing with those thoughts and the struggles because of the fact that I asked for help. So just realize you can do it.
And you can, and there is help out there. But Josh, thank you for opening up, sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to There Is Hope, and any advice or counsel given was provided for informational purposes only. For more information on what you've heard about today, click on thereishoperadio.org. That's thereishoperadio.org.